The concept of a sequence of events that continuously recur according to the laws of nature is fundamental to the philosophy of theosophy, which posits that everything, from the minutest particle to the largest cosmic system, is subject to the law of cycles. It is also called the law of periodicity, and is the second of the three fundamental propositions of the philosophy of theosophy. Cycle is a very old term used in the far past. In our civilization, it is applied to a doctrine which is not very well understood, but which is accepted by a great many scientific men, a great many religions, and by a great many thinking men. The theory is, as held by the ancient Egyptians, that there is a cycle, a law of cycles, which governs humanity, governs the earth, and governs all that is in the universe. In the Egyptian monuments, papyri, and other records, the cycles are spoken of. They held, and the ancient Chinese also held, that a great cycle governs the earth, called the sidereal cycle, which is related to the stars. The work was so large that it had to be measured by the stars, and that cycle is 25,800 and some odd years. They claim to have measured this enormous cycle. The Egyptians gave evidence that they had also measured it, and so have others. So that in these ancient records, looking at the questions of cycles, we have a hint that man has been living on the earth, has been civilized and uncivilized for more years than we have taught to believe. The ancient theosophists have always held that civilization with humanity went around the earth in cycles, in rings, returning and again and returning upon itself. But that each turn of the cycle, on the point of return, it was higher than before. This law of cycles is held in theosophical doctrines to be the most important of all, because it is at the bottom of all. It is a part of the law of the unknown being who is the universe, that there shall be a periodic coming from and a periodic returning again upon itself. Now that the law of cycles does prevail in the world, must be very evident to you if we'll reflect, and we will reflect on a few moments. The first cycle I would draw your attention to is the daily cycle, when the sun rises in the morning, sets at night, returning again next morning, you following the sun, rising in the morning, and at night going to sleep, at night almost appearing dead, but the next morning awakening to life once more. That is the first cycle. You can see at once that there are, therefore, in man's life, just as many cycles of that kind as there are days in his life. The next is the monthly cycle, when the moon changes every 28 days, which marks the month. We have months running to more days, but that is only for convenience to avoid change in the year. The moon gives the month and marks the monthly cycle. In a single life, a person is under the influence of numerous cycles: daily, weekly, monthly, seasonal, annual, and proceeding further and further of larger cycles. He has his own individual cycles pertaining to his bodily transformation and to his psychic nature. Likewise, there are cycles which affect the life of groups of men and women, family, community, nation, race, and humanity as a whole. Each person, therefore, is influenced by his own particular cycles, as well as those pertaining to the complex nature without. He is affected by the changing seasons of the year, while he has his own incarnational seasons, the spring of youth, the summer of manhood, the autumn of adult years, and the winter of old age. Moreover, he has his own psychological seasons and physiological seasons. Each year he passes through the repetitive changes in his moral, mental nature, which corresponds to the seasons of Mother Nature. Further still, just as a single day has its changing phases from dawn to twilight, from twilight to dawn, so also has man. One fundamental difference in the cycles of nature are a rhythmical precession, but man's free will actions make his own cycles erratic, in the sense that they often do not coincide with those of nature. Human pain and suffering may be said to be the result of the personal cycles not synchronizing with those of and in nature. When we are asked to help and work on with her, nature, it is implied that our human plan should go by nature's dependable clock. Motion there always is everywhere. Rhythmic motion spells order, spells progress, harmony, and peace, just as erratic movement, contrary to nature's laws of universal brotherhood, spells chaos, retrogression, discord, and strife. In the life of nature and of man, certain days, therefore, have a special significance. In nature, they are the vernal and autumnal equinoxes, the summer and winter solstices, and so on. These are conjunctions of cycles. The closing of one cycle, when its influences have completed their decline, and the opening of another with the rising of its influences. Similarly, there are important days in national and racial cycles, and likewise in the lives of individual human beings. The earth journeys around the sun, brings us back once more to the winter solstice, the new year according to nature's clock. Each turn of this annual cycle, which is not a circle, but rather a spiral, should bring us to a higher level. It should be a different man or woman in each case from the one who joined last year in the exchange of greetings and felicitations appropriate to the day. A year, as we know, is a considerable part of the time available for our human journey. So in every direction, the law of cycles is found to govern. It is all according to the great inherent law of the periodical ebb and flow, the great day and night of nature. The tides in ocean rise and fall. Similarly, in the great ocean of nature, there is a consistent ebb and flow, a mightier tide which carries all with it. The only thing that remains unshaken, immovable, never turning, is the spirit itself. That, as St. James said, and he doubtless was himself a wise theosophist, is without variableness and hath no shadow of turning. Now, this great law of periodic returns pertains also to every thought every individual man has in his daily life. Every idea that you have, every thought you have, affects your brain and mind by its impression. That begins a cycle. It may seem to leave your mind, but it will return again under the same cyclic law in some form, either better or worse, and wakes up once again that old impression. Even the very feelings that you have of sorrow or gladness will return in time, more or less according to your disposition, but inevitably in their cycle. It applies again in matters of study, where we use the intellectual organs only. When a person begins a study of a difficult subject, or one more weighty than usual, there is a difficulty in keeping the mind upon it. The mind wanders. It is disturbed by other and older ideas and impressions. But by persistency, a new law, a new cycle is established, which, by kept rolling, at last we obtain the mastery. In closing, here's a quote from author Ellsworth Huntington, famous for his ecological books. He said, "The whole history of life is a record of cycles." Today's topic is cycles, the rhythm and harmony of nature.
Cycles, the rhythm and harmony of nature. Well, we are told to start where we are. So what, we're performing a cycle now. We're a Sunday morning, 11 o'clock. We've made it a part of our life cycle. So, I mean, getting up every morning is a cycle. You know, if we look and examine, everything is a cycle. Something that we have never done before. Probably we have done it before, but we'll do it again. But we look at this idea of cycles, and we see in the particular exactly the cycle that's going on. But we are to go, as was presented in the forum talk, to take a universal, or more, universal is the correct word, look at that same situation. Here we are on a little blue marble, floating in space, spinning around a sun. And we have many companion planets doing the same. But here we are on this little blue marble, while it is spinning on its axis and revolving around the sun, which in itself is revolving around that spiritual sun, that unknown sun. That everything is in motion. Everything. So motion connotates change. So what do we see around us? Change. Now, anyone have any comments or SL?
In the forum talk, there was mention of racial cycles. And we understand from our study that there are four different cycles that affect the races, the golden, silver, bronze, and Kali Yuga. And it said we are now in the Kali Yuga age, and it's going to last for quite a bit of time. Can we have some context about the nature of this cycle within, what we'll experience, what we can do with the cycle?
Yes, that's quite interesting in the fact that there are these great cycles, and it's stated that we are in the Kali Yuga by the Hindu calculation, and that this cycle is one of spiritual darkness, where things are quite material, where things seem to the values that are productive of a harmonious life are not considered that it is a time of great selfishness and great materialism, but also the opportunity to do things that on the spiritual side that bring forth much more benefit, three times the benefit in a normal cycle. So that the effort to understand our true nature and what we are then able to live in that cycle, but in a spiritual way. And we are offered with theosophy a ways of awakening our spiritual nature, that aspect of ourself that we have sort of, as we descended into matter, we identified with it. But we are not that. We are spiritual beings. We are beings of light. And so the mystery of life is that we are life. We are producers of action. You know, and but Kali Yuga, you know, we see it around us. That doesn't mean that's what we are. We are not that. You know, we have to step aside and see its true nature, and then we can make a rational decision of how we want to act during this cycle. So yes, I mean, life is an adventure, and it seems to me it's difficult right now. Yes, ULT.
Go ahead.
Does a habit establish a cycle, or does a cycle establish a habit? Is there a connection between the two?
Is there a connection between, you know, an action and a habit? Well, if you repeat something, it becomes a habit. And that sort of, you know, one action is, actions aren't what we would say singular. Like it just do one thing and that there's not connected to anything else. Every action is connected to something else. And there's a reaction from that action. Yes, you'll take.
Well, by the time something is a habit, a cycle has already been established, whether it be a good habit or a bad habit.
Yes, yes. And that's how we create habits. That's why we, on Sunday mornings, we come here. We try to make it a habit. You know, try to influence our mind, because in this cycle, you know, everything is material, you know, but we're in that world. We choose to be here because this is the only place that real work can be done. SL.
To follow up on that point, being punctual or showing up at a place at the same time is not just establishing a physical habit, but when we come to a meeting such as this, we are also bringing back with us a certain motivation, a certain attitude, a certain feeling, a certain mental capacity and energy. And that all comes back too. So if we want to be able to focus our energies and studies, it's good to get into this habit of punctuality in setting up definite times we do things.
Yes, and the mind is malleable. So if we have a habit of something constructive that we do, we should try to reinforce it. And we would consider this constructive. We're trying to add to the world and not take from it. And that cycle is going to be repeated this month. You know, when the winter solstice comes, it's renewal. It's a new beginning. It's a cyclic change, and that it's felt. It's felt by the race, by humanity, in the Northern Hemisphere at least. But there's those traditions of the awakening of the light, which we are. So, but I think one of the things that this topic brings out is, where can we go for refuge? Where can we go for refuge in this world? Sometimes we can go into nature. Well, if we have it available, we should use it. That's why in large cities, they put parks, because it is an essential part of our being. The trees, the grass, the air outside compared to the air inside. You know, being in nature is rejuvenating. You know, I think in our classes we're talking about there's a constant exchange of lives in and out of the body. You know, our bodies, they may not look like they're in motion other than when we move it, but the tissues and everything is alive, and everything is moving. Molecules are moving in and out constantly. So when we breathe, therefore, we're also bringing in lives and letting and exhausting those lives, bringing them in and exhaust. And we do that. What kind of cycle is that? And the heart. Why does it keep on going? Where does it get its energy? How long have we been alive? And this little thing has been pumping all that time. Yes, JCS.
On the subject of getting out into nature, the Gita has some really good advice about the tendency to think that we need to retreat to a monastic existence, a solitary existence in the wilderness. What would Theosophy say about the use of meditation being a journey into nature and perhaps one of the greatest refuges of all?
Well, we can't say it any better than that, because that's what it is. You know, meditation takes us to that retreat, where we are able to come to terms with whatever it is that we are, you know, coping with, and expands our mind also. We dwell on things that are particular, But we also dwell on things that are universal. And we try to expand our consciousness. And that's what meditation enables us to do. It's because it is through concentration. I think as was mentioned in the talk that the mind, the lower mind, just giddy up horsey. It's off in every direction. And if you don't control it, good luck. You will find yourselves in some situations that you didn't think about. Here you are. And then if you go back and look, well, yeah, you can see how you got here. You think about it every once in a while, this, that, and that. And before long, you're doing it, or you're, you know, or you're in that situation. So it's quite interesting, because we are creatures of creation. We create. We are beings of light and love. And we have just become so enamored with what we find, and we think we're separate. You know, it's very alluring. And it's filled with glamour. And we are sometimes, you know, we have found ourselves just walking and not really doing anything but walking. And, you know, cycles, you know, because once you, as before, I think when it was mentioned that if a habit, you know, is really something that we all do. We are in that, and the Gita, it says it's the book of devotion. What are we devoted to? It's a natural instinct to be devoted. It's part of our nature to be devoted. We find devotion to many things, to our cat, to our dog, to our goldfish. You know, we are devoted. We are devotional people. So the Gita says, great. Use that for the benefit of mankind. Devote yourself to the highest that you can imagine. Yes, SL.
In the introduction comments, it was mentioned that we're this week taking up the study of the astral body, which we understand stores all the thought impressions of our life. And we've already discussed in classes the astral light, which is sort of a memory tablet of nature. So we understand that those impressions in the astral light, even ones made centuries before by other people, periodically return as epidemics, not just physical, but moral and intellectual ones too. So how can understanding that natural cycle of those impressions help us deal with the conditions we find ourselves in as a humanity?
Well, we say to ourselves, how am I responsible for this? Why am I seeing this? Why am I a part of this? And then you come to understand that you have thought, we have thought and acted in many different ways. And the only thing that we can really change or have any really influence on is in the very moment, the choice we make of how to react to what is coming to us and how to use what we are seeing to help. So how can we help? By elevating the consciousness. And that is, you know, you see it all around you. People are very conscious of life around them. You know, we say our pets, our dogs, our cats, or, you know, but we're conscious of life. And that is a sensitivity that's becoming more and more prevalent. You know, we've come from a world of brutality, of, you know, where, of darkness. We should not say brutality in that sense, but, you know, you've come from darkness. And the light of mind is shining. So it's shining on all our darkness as well. And we have to take responsibility to make change. ULT.
Good.
One of the interesting ideas that we've noticed is how the cycles of the earth can affect the cycles of nature. When the seasons change, we know that there's massive migrations of birds going north and south, and that the massive migrations that people talk about in Africa and in Alaska, even when the cycles of the earth change. So it's interesting. You wonder how the animals and the birds have been able to sense those changes in the cycles, and they react with their own cycles to it.
Well, we see that in all of nature. And, you know, we as humans communicate by speech, and we communicate by what we see. But in the other kingdoms, there's an intelligence that is far more sensitive to the vibrations of life. And each season has its vibration because of the amount of light that we are endowed with during that season. So ironically, we're going into darkness now. So what does that signal to the human soul? You know, retreat within. Examine your life. Examine yourself. Examine what you know. You know, and then we're examining ourselves as it gets darker. And then all of a sudden, the light starts getting brighter, or not brighter, but the days get longer. And we are feeling an uplifting of our soul, of our very being, because that is what's happening. So, you know, when we get in the rhythm of nature, you know, unfortunately, we have lost our contact with nature in many ways. And that the comment was that if we have the opportunity to sit in nature, one will hear the harmony that exists there. You know, you hear that hum, that vibration. Well, if you live near a highway at night, you can hear that same hum. In a city, if you're approaching a city, on, you know, there's that same hum. It's the vibration of life, that middle vibration of harmony. And that's where we all try to exist. SL?
Could that instinct that we see through the animal kingdom be the cyclic return of impressions stored in the memory of that species, or cyclic return of the impressions within the intelligence of that species? And it's instinctual because it's just automatically following the cycles, whereas was pointed out earlier, human beings can choose not to follow their natural cycles and create problems.
Well, cycles are created by a moment, by a choice. and that well, not so much by a choice, but as an animal, this repetition over and over and over again of the seasons or whatever, or the no seasons or the frigid cold, their intelligence has adapted, or has told, or has, as us, has developed a form around that intelligence to best express that intelligence. JCS?
Perhaps one way to consider this is that in the animal kingdom, soul is less differentiated. And so that as a complex, each category of each animal form works as a synthetic whole and responds to particular habits and instincts and behaviors in a way that is not individuated. And in the human kingdom, because there is a stronger degree of expression possible for soul and introspection and mind, we can disrupt that. We can act as solitary, the illusion of the solitary soul, acting on passions and desires, rather than answering the call of the universal, the wild, the universe, what's great and good for the whole. Perhaps it's individuation that explains the difference.
Yeah, we would think that, and a feeling of separateness, that, you know, we first see that in the other kingdom, you know, humans see that in the other kingdoms. Oh, I'm not a dog, I'm not a cat, I'm not a horse. And that's not what's being said. There is that intelligence that is within them, that is the same that's within us, just to a different degree. So that's why when the mind is not guided by the heart, we become we can't become more than what we are. The mind has to be guided by the heart. We have to have a compassionate mind and an intelligent heart, so that these cycles that we set up are not disruptive. We try to find that middle ground, that tone, that of harmony. So the first is a smile, a friendly greeting. In any way that you can promote harmony, you're making a change, because it's not promoted. Except if you're, well, it is promoted, you know, but the harmony oftentimes is promoted for self-interest. You know, there's no self-interest here. What we are promoting is something that belongs to each and every one of us. And we've just forgotten it. We're so caught up in our busy, busy world, you know, and that we've, you know, forgotten who we are. But we're being reminded. We're being reminded that cycle has come again for us, because we are here with theosophy in a public forum. So we probably can consider us that we probably sat at the feet of a master, a Buddha, a Lao Tzu, Confucius, a student of Plato, a student of Pythagoras, or many of the many other schools that existed, you know, in the Christian era, the beginning of Christianity. So, we are welcoming any other questions. Well, yes, ULT.
Okay. So is there ever a time where we might need to change a cycle then? And if so, we would have to recognize it. And then how would we change it?
How would we change the cycle? Well, by doing something else in place of what we would usually do. So if we're thinking about having an ice cream cone, we say to ourselves, well, let's not think about that. Because if I think about it, guess what? When I pass that first temptation, I'm done. But that's what we do. It's all in our mind, you know, and we can change in an instant. But when we fix our mind on something, we can achieve it. Unfortunately, we fix our minds on things that are really not necessary. Yes, ULT.
So we've heard a suggestion for those who want to quit smoking or vaping now has become very popular too. Instead of thinking about not doing the activity, to think about breathing fresh air, think about the benefits, think about the opposite of what that inhaling that smoke will do to yourself. Instead of thinking about the negative effects, which we don't know, maybe that works for some, but also going against the cycle, setting up a new cycle of just breathing in instead of like sucking that smoke.
Well, I mean, habits are one of the roadblocks we have set up for ourselves. We have set up habits that, you know, it's not so much what it is that we are concentrating on as a habit, but our tendency. What is driving that habit? What are we looking for? What is it that has piqued that curiosity? What are we curious about? And it really comes back to ourselves. We're curious about ourselves. We want to know ourselves. We want to be able to have ourselves as our friend. We want to love ourselves in a way that we can project that love to other people. SL.
In the Bhagavad Gita, it says that when gift giving or offering of help is done in the spirit of truth, it's done at the right time, the right place to the right person, but emphasizes the right time. So if we want to help somebody, when is the best time in their cycle to ask to offer them help? In other words, is there a time when our offering of help would not be useful? And is there a time in their cycle when it would be useful? How would we recognize when a person is ripe for being helped?
Well, when they ask for it. But there's ways of asking for it that are nonverbal. I mean, if someone needs help or assistance, there's not really a right time or a wrong time. You just have to offer it. Where there's a need, there's always help needed. You know, we see people around us that are in need. But you have to be warned that we don't want to cripple someone by doing it that which is their duty. But if someone is unable to help themselves, you know, that would be an indicator that there's some need there for assistance from some other human being, for another human being. Now, you know, it seems that this time of year is a time of giving and receiving. But we're not so sure that it would be the best time, but we would think any time would be. And I think it would be up to our discrimination. And that is one of our faculties, which we are trying to develop, to be able to discriminate the right from wrong, what's best in a certain situation. It takes discrimination. So, I mean, we are all come from a background that, you know, to give of ourselves. And sometimes we give and it's not appropriate. It's out of time and out of season. And that, you know, it's a very, very interesting question. Does anyone else have any ideas or any impressions that this comment brings out? Yes, that's how.
Well, in that same part of the Gita, it talks about seek this wisdom by strong search, by questions, and by humility, and the wise that know will help you. So we thought that maybe that could be applied. Yes, we want to help people when they're suffering, and we can certainly offer help, but they may not receive it because they're not really at the point where they're searching. They're not really at the point where they're asking why they are suffering. Maybe they're at the point where they're blaming others, or they don't want to be helped. They're too proud and not humble enough to receive help from others. So I guess as we understand our own heart, we understand that in others too.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you totally agree. Well, the cycle is coming to a close here. Let's see if we can get another few questions. Yes, JC, yes.
Well, just the process of considering the needs of someone else, making the attempt to be compassionate and observing, and then the process of using the logic to try to figure out how and when to help, that entire process is a degree of meditation, isn't it? And it generates force and energy. I think there was the earlier comment that we are beings of light. So that as we invigorate that light, that vibration, that radiation can help to alleviate, can help to influence, can help to empower the search of others.
Yes. As we have descended into matter, this being of light, we've got mud stuck to us. So we have to really shake it off. ULT, you had a comment?
Yes.
Yeah, just a rather comical one. Those of us that have pets, probably more so dogs and cats, it's like they get into a cycle of when they know that they're supposed to be fed. And if their human caretaker decides they're going to change that cycle, you can definitely see the poor little creatures react to that change. But we just wanted to end on just kind of a funny note.
Yeah, well, I think we're like that too. If we don't get our food when we expect it or on that schedule, sometimes we get irritated, you know. So, but yes, we're all trying to grow through that. But yes, that comment is quite appropriate. Anything else? Well, this cycle is that we have are continuing on Sundays. Remember next Sunday, I think we're going to have a very, very interesting conversation about death and rebirth, which we're all subject to. We know death, but if, you know, rebirth, okay. So we'd like to remind everyone out there that dislodge and these study classes are voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. Now, we're all welcome to participate, but we're, as Theosophists, are putting this out there because this is a forum or a platform where you can advance your spiritual growth by trying to verbalize those spiritual ideas which we are trying to develop in ourselves. So we are like a school, and we welcome each and every one to enroll in this school. Okay? So the cycle begins. We're having some very important cycles coming up this month, or at least one. And then we'll see you Wednesday for our study class on the astral body and the human constitution. Have a great day.